design, implementation of policies, schools, and communities. So the next step is to interpret what these colorful clusters actually mean. And as you can see, this is often the most difficult task. Now this graph helps to form the basis of the research agenda and actually looks at the ratings. So those clusters were what showed actually what was the sort, how the data was sorted, but this looks at the actual rating of the data. And it was created using a scale from 1 to 10, so if you remember, everyone had to rate their importance and the feasibility from 1 to 10, so this one shows the importance, and it plots the average rating of the statements for each cluster. Based on the item ratings of both researchers and practitioners, the cluster on city planning and design emerged as the most important, followed by economic evaluation. So you can see at the top, the researchers are on the left and the practitioners are on the right, and the highest one that was actually rated was city planning and design as being the most important for future research. And you can see that there was a high overall concordance between the researchers and practitioners on the importance of the statements with, at the bottom, I don't know if everyone can see, but there's a correlation of 0.86. For feasibility, both researchers and practitioners assigned the highest rating to items in the schools cluster. The next most feasible cluster was population subgroups among researchers and measurement methodology among the practitioners. As with the importance ratings, there was also a high agreement between the two types with a correlation of 0.77. Now this third figure essentially is a combination of the last two graphs that I just showed you. It compares the ratings for importance among practitioners on the left and then the ratings for feasibility among researchers on the right. Now the rationale for this analysis was that practitioners are more likely to be closer to what is needed in communities they serve, so they may know what's more important for the communities, while researchers are closer to the research process and they may know that doing a certain type of research study may not be at all feasible. And then these analyses showed an inverse correlation with a correlation of negative 0.59. So essentially what practitioners thought was extremely important, the researchers thought it was going to be not feasible at all, and vice versa. The last step is to utilize the maps. 26 individuals, 20 of whom had participated in the sorting of the research, met for an in-person meeting in February of this year to go over the concept maps and to discuss how they would be utilized. After initial discussion of the results and potential products, the participants were divided into 5 work groups. And each of those work groups was assigned 1 or 2 clusters, the different themed shapes that you saw earlier, those clusters. Each of those groups was given a couple of clusters, and then they were asked to get together and discuss 3 main questions. What are some tools or methods that would be useful in studying each issue? How might various disciplines and professions work together to address these research areas? And what actions need to be taken to move this research agenda forward as quickly as possible, and by whom? The meeting resulted in the following recommendations to utilize the research agenda. There needs to be more specific surveillance tools. These tools, along with results, should be geared toward a broader audience. There's a need for evaluation of natural experiments. Future research should include components that are qualitative and participatory, and there needs to be improved communication among disciplines to reduce duplication of research. So implementation of this research agenda will require coordination and strategic planning, long-term commitment from funders, and recognition of the top research priorities. Also, this agenda provides a springboard for action for future research in physical activity and environmental research. And then all researchers who are interested in actually utilizing this agenda will soon be able to access it in the Journal of Physical Activity and Health. And this is, the paper is currently in press. It's not out yet. And then also the Physical Activity Policy Research Network at St. Louis University has been able to get continued funding based on the fact that they're using the research agenda to develop their top research priorities for their network. So it's already being used. So in conclusion, We hope that this agenda continues to serve as a catalyst to promote future research in the top priority areas seen by both researchers and practitioners across the country. We hope that this research will in turn lead to greater long-term population-wide change in physical activity levels. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge the following organizations who contributed vastly to this project.
That's the last of our presentations. We have a few minutes for discussion. If people have questions, you could tell me who you'd like to ask the question to and state your name, and I'll repeat it, and then they can respond. The question was, what's the reasoning behind doing voluntary HIAs?
You know, honestly, when you go to, there's a lot of the more progressive places are the ones who are interested in it. For instance, our Atlanta Regional Commission is interested in looking at our Livable Centers Initiative and redesigning corridors because they're actually, they've already kind of got health on the radar screen, but they don't quite know how to measure it. And when we've had funding to select places, for instance, Stapleton Airport, when they were redeveloping that into the live, work, play community, it's kind of the people who already kind of have it on their radar screen, but just don't quite know how to measure it. It's typically some of the voluntary ones. Other times, we've just done them because we think it's an important issue. And for some of the walk to school ones in the Buford Highway, it was just such a giant problem that, you know, we ended up selecting. And I'm trying to. So it's, there was a coal plant in Florida, and they actually paid some consultants to do it because there was so much opposition from the community, and they really wanted to detail, was there really going to be huge impacts in the community's health. So it's really for a variety of reasons. It's hard to really give a summary of all the different ones that have been done across places in San Francisco. Voluntarily, they just assumed it as part of their job. Looking at a lot of times it's like they're tearing down low-income housing and replacing it with very high-income housing, displacing all of the people. So Rajiv and his group have gone in and said, you need to, find some housing or, save a certain number of these units for the low-income population. So it's not always the developers asking. Sometimes it's a public health professional. You just see the need to have it done. And in other instances, it actually is the developers or the transportation people coming to us and asking for the analysis. So it's done, I'd probably say, for those two primarily reasons. Yeah, and I'm sure Aaron, and I think he's here in the audience, he's in the back. He's the one who's doing a lot of the work up in Alaska with the oil and the coal mines. And, and that's one thing that you realize, everyone who's involved in the process, and ideally you have a stakeholder group, and that's what you define in scoping, where you get everyone who's going to be coming from all of the different perspectives. And sometimes it does get very contentious. With the Buford Highway one, we had different reactions from different groups. Some people thought it was great that we were looking at this, and other times it can get, not so friendly. So there's actually a great book by Kem, K-E-M-M, and where they've detailed all of the different countries' experiences with this. And there's always going to be different people with different agendas. And you just kind of have to, as a practitioner, it's like you just kind of have to be aware of where everyone's coming from And you need to maintain your scientific objective when you're doing the HIA. And I didn't actually list the values of an HIA. It's democracy and equity, you know, scientific robust practice, you know, sustainable development. So you do have values that underpin these HIAs. Absolutely. Ideally, the community is involved in all steps of the process. And Rajiv has done, if you read the Oak Tonight and some of the other ones they've done, he is really the leader in community involvement. And everything from, you know, looking at the research question to prioritizing recommendations to even help formulating recommendations. So it's absolutely appropriate to have them involved in the scoping process.
One more HIA question, then Candace will be at this back door for... and I believe you're in the center.